Good evening, and welcome to another episode of Nigeria Politics Weekly. My name is Michael, and co-hosting with me is Phoenix. Today we have one guest. Our guest is Ray. He's a Nigerian businessman. Now we're going to be discussing three topics. The first topic is the revelations by a Nigerian journalist that a businessman by the name of IBD Bende is also a smuggler of illegal contraband and is apparently thinking of running for office in Ogun State. So we're going to be discussing that. Secondly, we'll discuss the 200 pupils who were abducted in Kaduna. And finally, we'll discuss President Bola Tinubu's trip to Qatar. So on to our first topic. Phoenix, who is IBD Bende? Is that how the name is pronounced? And how has he been outed as an alleged smuggler? Can you talk us through the drama, Felix?
Hi, Michael. And thanks, Ray, for joining us. Hello, listeners. Well, the first time I heard the name was as a result of Fisayos Shoyombo of FIJ. He did an expose, as he's wont to do, on smuggling, and as he's done with other such investigative reporting, he normally likes to go undercover. So he went undercover as a smuggler and got introduced to people who are in the smuggling business in the Southwest, predominantly in Ogun State, and in working with them, you know, he was looking to smuggle rice into Nigeria, and of course worked to get some connections and got involved. And in working with them was when he heard about this IBD Dende chap that you just mentioned as being somebody who's neck deep in the smuggling activities in that part of Nigeria, and so he reported on the guy, and all of a sudden we started seeing that apparently, I mean, he's not just some mysterious guy, but apparently has connections to politicians, people in power, and in fact was described in an article that was meant to launder his image. In Business Day, he was described as an ally of the current president, Bola Tinubu. In fact, I think there was a picture that one saw of him and Tinubu, and it is alleged that he was on Tinubu's delegation to the COP, was it 28 or whatever, in Dubai. So that's how, you know, that was the first I heard of him. And of course, we've seen all the furore that has generated, especially with more revelations coming out that, or more allegations, let me put it that way, that he's actually in bed with the customs hierarchy and almost like a front. That's the allegation that has been made that we have heard so far.
Thank you, Phoenix. Let me bring in Ray at this point. Ray, I presume you read the news report or watched the video. And I'm sure, like most readers or watchers, you were surprised at how porous Nigeria's borders seem to be, that you can literally smuggle anything in and out of the country. Is this your experience, or is this something you were aware of? Were you surprised, like the rest of us, that at how basically lax security at the borders is? Ray.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. I mean, the first time I heard about the gentleman's name was in the recently released report, and it's unfortunate. In that report, it says our borders were very porous. I think I've only ever traveled by road out of Nigeria a few years ago. Then I was going to Ghana many years ago. And I think You know how you go to ABC Transport, right? ABC used to run Badagry, Ghana then. My own experience was that the roads were bad. The Nigerian portion of the border was bad. And it didn't really strike me as it was porous then because he had security here and there. But I digress. In the report he released, it talked about how borders were porous across the country, how you could bring in things and all of that. And it's unfortunate the customer has not yet given a robust response to that. All I can say is indeed unfortunate.
Thank you, Ray. Phoenix, the other issue you highlighted is the fact that this fellow, IBD Dende, seems to have close links with the president, Bola Ahmed Tinubu. In fact, after this news report was leaked, the Minister for State for the Environment, Mr. Ishak Salako, actually tweeted personal congratulations to this IBD fellow and congratulated him on his birthday. So it seems clear that he does have connections to this APC government. And one of the questions a number of people are asking is, what is it about this particular government that all kinds of criminality seems to be associated with their members? You have the chief of staff who had his legal troubles in the US. You have the president himself who had his legal troubles. Now you have this Dende fellow. So what is happening within this APC government, Phoenix?
Well, I mean, I think, when they say you have when you keep hearing stuff about a particular set of people, it ceases to be coincidence. And then there's that thing they say about birds of a feather flock together. So, I mean, we keep hearing all of this different, stories come up. We know quite well that the MTO Luoma is also in bed with the government and all sorts of other characters that seem to have transitioned from when the leader of this government, of course, we know he was governor in Lagos for 8 years and has had a stranglehold on Lagos politics. And all these characters seem to come from that, relationship. And of course, they've not been left behind in the bid to go to the center. And quite naturally, as human beings, this is where, when they think they are now in power and they have influence, become more emboldened, right? And so you begin to hear more about people who were shadowy characters in the past. And it's, but I mean, part of the questions we've heard being asked by Nigerians is, what is the response of the government to the allegations? I mean, so far there has been nothing. FIJ continues to report that they've tried to get access to the customs authorities, the public relations officer for the customs, refuses to talk to them and says that reaching out to him on WhatsApp is unprofessional. So you're like, there are just too many, there's too many question, there are too many questionable characters around the government, and it just raises all of the concerns that came up during the election process about, being fit for office and what that portends for Nigeria. And now we're seeing some of it begin to manifest, So as with this, and let's not forget, the manner in which the election was won, the character being called into question, and all of the allegations against the president himself, that lends itself to impunity. And so Nigerians should very rightfully be concerned and should put the pressure on the government to show that it is not a government peopled with to try to show itself in a good light. I mean, I know we're going to talk about Qatar, but one of the things that the president was saying out there was like someone should tell him or reach out to him if people try to, bribe them when they are trying to invest in the country. Trying to send a message of probity and transparency. But when you don't deal with issues like this, these allegations that we're hearing against this IBD Dende person, if you don't deal with the issues of the allegations against the customs hierarchy, then nobody's going to take you at your word. Nobody's going to take you seriously. It's like, you're saying stuff, but nobody sees you take proper action. So, I mean, wait to see how things pan out, but it's exactly showing, the concerns that people like me raised about the character of those going into office and why they did not seem to be fit for the position.
Thank you, Phoenix. Ray, the other aspect of this is the fact that there are reports that this IBD Dende is planning to run for governor of Ogun State. Now, if you remember, the current governor of Ogun State also has his own controversies. There's pictures and allegations that he himself was imprisoned in the United States before he became governor. Does this not raise questions about the nature of our political system that a character like this is now in contention to govern a state, right?
Thank you. While I understand that his name is Regin, right? And since we're a lawful society that's democratic, that gives everyone the opportunity to defend themselves until the court finds you guilty of any allegation or whatever you've assumed to have committed, we'll have to for a lack of a better word, allow the court to decide if he can run or not. But again, Nigeria is quite an interesting country where everyone just wants to survive. I would rather not comment on the current governor of Ogun State because it's been said, or rather the way Nigeria is structured, that except a court finds you guilty or ineligible to run for office, you are eligible to run for office regardless of how the society sees you, what you have done, or what you may not have done. So if this fellow, IBD Dende, is running for governorship regardless of the uproar on social media and allegations, and with the custom not saying anything, it's within his fundamental human right to run for governor. And if the people so wish, this is the person they want to lead them, so be it. It's of course you must have seen the snippet of adverts of the gentleman from Edo State who's running for governorship, who was being a lie user that he went into his studio to release a song in order to fit in into the a political season Edo State. So people need to allow people decide who they want to lead them. The only thing I'll say is that whatever happens, the outcome of your choice, of your electoral choice, the consequences you should bear. So on the issue of IBD, then I may not like him, you might not like him. Him it's been alleged he's a smuggler, but if people of Ogun State so decide that is who they want to lead them, then so be it. A democracy is messy. That's what I think.
Thank you, Ray. Phoenix, you've heard what Ray said. Ray says, well, he has no real opinion on whether or not IBD Dende is a fit and proper person to be governor, that if the people decide that they want him and the courts cannot disqualify him, then it's their choice. Is that also your view, Phoenix? And then also extending the conversation further, if the allegations are true, that the customs services themselves are collaborating with smugglers to bring in illegal goods into Nigeria, then are we safe in this country, Phoenix?
To your question, we're not safe. And And again, we keep stumbling on this types of things, you know. Ever since, I forget the gentleman's name now. Danjuma, Theophilus Danjuma, alleged that Nigerian security forces were colluding with Fulani headsmen and those attacking people in the Middle Belt. It's always been out there that look, the people who are supposed to be protect in the country are actually, you know, in cahoots with these bad actors, you know, for their own pecuniary reasons. And it made sense because you're like, how can there be such a massive breakdown in security across the country when you have security forces, when you are spending so much on security in the country? And that's what we're seeing with these allegations against the customs. There's always been noise about Nigeria having porous borders. There's always been talk about corruption in customs. Let's not forget, one of the major presidential aspirants in the last election started his career as a customs official and became stupendously wealthy after all. And so there have always been you know, allegations around him and around the customs organization. So it is not entirely a surprise to hear that look there, you know, the customs senior officials are in cahoots, you know, with smugglers. We've also heard how the Navy enables, you know, oil bunkering and things like that. So you're clearly seeing Nigeria in a state of decay, and those who should be, you know, who have been given responsibility for key parts of the national architecture are the ones debasing it for their own greed and personal reasons. And this needs to be stamped out. But the only way you can stamp that out, again, back to election choices, is by making sure you have the right people in power who would make the right choices, who will weed out, you know, those bad eggs and try to start again, you know, in the right manner. But you know, Nigerians chose, or Nigerians allowed themselves to be robbed of a chance of a new start, and you know, and it remains to be seen how we will sort that out, either through continued pressure on the elected leaders, you know, through exposés such as the one that Soyombo and his team have done, and Nigerians, you know, getting behind it and making sure this is not just something that is swept under the rug. You know, but we're too busy fighting each other. There's too much polarization for people to understand that you need the country to work for everybody. And so that needs to be sorted out. On the Dende guy running for, attempting to run for governorship, and Ray is right, because at the end of the day, we want a democracy. It's not yet a perfect democracy, but it only becomes perfect if we allow the tenets of democracy to take root. And that means, you know, the voice of the people has to matter. So yes, if we were told that he's been arrested a number of times but always comes out unscathed, which means that he probably hasn't been convicted of any crime. So if he hasn't been convicted of a crime, that means he can run for office. If people of the part of the country where he's vying to be governor allow him to get to power, so be it. I mean, it's up to the people to make sure they choose the right characters. And seeing all the things that are happening in the country, surely people are learning that, you know, their choices at the ballot box, you know, matter. And yes, we can say that elections are being stolen. We can say that there's a lot of election malpractice and violence and all of that. But if people stand up and come together and refuse to allow, you know, all of these things to happen, perhaps they might stand a chance in choosing the right people to lead them. So it's up to the people entirely to turn this country, Nigeria, around before it descends into utter chaos with all this illegality and all these bad actors getting into power and all this, you know, breakdown of law and order, you know, and all the ramifications for insecurity, and which leads to lack of investment, which leads to endemic poverty, and all the social ills that you can think of. They're all linked. And so it's up to Nigerians to decide what kind of country that they want.
Thank you, Phoenix. I'll just put my last question on this topic to Ray. Ray, one of the things the journalist was alluding to is the fact that it's not just illegal goods that are being smuggled through the borders. Apparently, IBD Dengde and others like him are in collusion with the customs services to smuggle in guns and drugs into the country. That in fact, some of the motorcycles that Boko Haram and the others use are smuggled in by smugglers like himself. Now, do you believe that, Ray, that the Nigerian Customs Services are colluding to bring in drugs and weapons into the country illegally?
No. I'm not gonna. That's a sweeping statement. In as much as I respect the rights of the FIJ journalist, right? In the last few weeks, we've always been concerned with journalists who make sweeping statements. We can assume that motorcycles being smuggled is what terrorists are using. I can also assume or say, oh, this person is smuggling this particular thing. Like I said, I've had experiences in government, in politics, in society, in campaign. I've mixed around, I've lived around. I've experienced personally all systems of, I've r rather interfaced with all systems in our country. What I will say is that the issue of gun, the issue of hanging a tag over someone's neck, I would rather still insist the courts and the law of the land make such our judgment. What we can say, what we can push for is for investigation, a root cause analysis of why even this expose is even being done. Push and push and push and push and make sure you get an investigation and a response. That's what I would say. But I would never ever agree or giving or alluding that such a person is smuggling this item when there's no physical proof of that. But again, it's very important that our customs, our security agents man our borders and make sure there's no form of smuggling whatsoever. Even if it's a pin, motorcycle, guns, it should never be allowed. But I won't say a particular person is importing any particular item whatsoever. That's my take on that.
Thank you, Ray. But we need to move on to our next topic now because of time. Now, Phoenix, there are news reports that over 200 children have been kidnapped in a part of Kaduna called, sorry, my pronunciation is terrible, but it's apparently from the Kuriga school, were kidnapped, over 200 of them in the school. Now, Phoenix, do we know who did this and what is going on? How can 200 children be kidnapped and nobody be able to stop them, including the security forces, Phoenix?
But I mean, Michael, this has become the norm, hasn't it? I mean, it's almost like a decade ago where this came into our consciousness with the Chibok girls kidnapping, and since then we've seen so many others. I mean, right now Nigerians are just numb to the situation, and year by year we continue to see the failure of our security forces to preempt the attacks, and more importantly, if you can't preempt the attack, to be able to solve them and recover the children. So it's, I mean, we've talked about the breakdown of security capability in Nigeria. We've talked about the need for a new way of looking at it. I know we talked about that ad infinitum on the podcast, especially during the election season, where we were talking about what's required and all of that. We talked about it when the new government came in and and appointed its new military chiefs and appointed this chap as the national security advisor. And the charge was, look, you have to rebuild Nigeria's security architecture. You have to focus a lot on intelligence. You have to focus a lot on, especially in these zones where we've had these repeated attacks, focus a lot on local capability, to enable, forestall these kinds of things. There have been clamors for state police, which I support because policing has to be local. What we hear there's support for it, but we have not seen any traction. And we continue to see cases like this, rather unfortunate again, that it is young children that are always at the brunt of these kinds of things, devastating the children, devastating the families, and it just points to the failure of the Nigerian state to keep Nigerians safe. And they need to step up to their responsibility and make sure that they deal with this effectively, which means stop this from happening anymore. But more importantly, go with a scorched earth policy against these gunmen, bandits. They're not ghosts or spirits that just disappear into thin air. They can't. You can't simply kidnap 200 plus people, and you won't show up on a map or show up on a. You get them. There must be somewhere where, a path that they take once they've done these kinds of things. You must be able to track and trace them. But it requires a willingness and a capability to do so, and we're not seeing enough of that, as far as I'm concerned.
Thank you, Phoenix. Ray, one of the interesting things about the report was that the kidnapping took place in the middle of the school assembly at 8 a.m. in the morning. And they said staff and passers-by were sending urgent messages to the security forces to come for help. And they said help did not arrive until hours later. So, are you telling me that the Nigerian security forces are incapable, even within the town, of responding to urgent messages unless it takes them hours? Right?
Thank you. The issue of PPs and or students in general being kidnapped in Nigeria is it's a very, 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 very personal to me because of Lee Sharibu. I just give you a background story why this is a very this is the reason why I haven't agreed to join you this evening. I tell people that since when Lee Sharibu was kidnapped and tragedy that has befallen and that keeps befalling, IHS has 2 kids now. And whenever anything bad happens in Nigeria, I really don't care anymore because of Lee Sharibu, because she's the one person I use to maintaining my sanity. I pray for her. I try to reach out to the family one time. I wrote letters as much as I can. Nothing has been done to her. Sorry, it's very emotional when ever I hear he's being kidnapped. My mom used to be a headmistress, so it's very personal to me. But to answer your question, I'm involved with a whole lot of NGO outreach and scholarship and empowerment in Nigeria, and I travel a lot around the country. So when you say in town, right? If, for example, I'll give an example. Let's say even in Benin or in Warri or in Abuja, most the way schools are built, right, with fences, big, they look isolated. So our schools are not built with security intent, right? So you can walk into any school, no matter, any public school in Nigeria, it's going to look quiet. And most times they have expanse of land, right? And they might even share fences with bush and forests, regardless. Or if you are in a public primary school in Nigeria, the next door neighbor might not know what's going on in that school. Of course, you have to factor in our roads are bad. Our response to a security issue is delayed, not just to school students, but to all emergencies. But again, I'm not making excuses, right, for the lapses of our security agencies. But I expected that due to the fact that we've experienced these unfortunate occurrences of kidnapping school students across Nigeria over the years, would have at least have a security response in place where each school is monitored, or we have officers who are meant to put an eye or in a particular zone location, be it civil defense, be it community policing, be it we have like a response team of a HELOCs or a battalion of the police army whose sole duty during school hours is to respond to such threats. And I also expected that due to location of the school or due to the states and how kidnapping is rife, I expected our security agencies to do more. But again, it is Nigeria. It seems everyone is just has given up or are tired. Because even the people you expect to protect us or do their work are also victim of the system. So basically, this is an issue right now. I can't even tell you how I feel, because it's extremely sad. Because as parents, you send your kids to school, you expect them to go to school to better their life. And people who attend this school are usually people from economically challenged homes, whose only hope in life is to have kids who will be better than them, and yet they meet this a tragedy. It's just unfortunate, Michael. It's really unfortunate.
Thank you, Ray, for providing that perspective. Phoenix, first of all, what is the National Security Advisor and what are the security chiefs doing about this issue? And secondly, the question is, if we cannot secure the schools in Northern Nigeria, is it, as some people have said, is it the best thing then to just shut down the schools if you cannot secure people's kids, Phoenix?
I mean, to your first question, all I know is the usual platitudes by the government. The president has directed security forces to make sure they recover the kids. But beyond that, I mean, whatever they're doing it behind closed doors because we don't see the impact or what they typically say is that with any kidnapping, the first, I think they say the first 24 to 48 hours are the most critical. And beyond that, I mean, you begin to lose control and lose capability to recover the people. I mean, I mean, first of all, let's even hope we hear from those, the gunmen that abducted them, because I don't know if anybody has claimed responsibility and what they plan to do, whether it's another ransom event or whatever. But let's hope that the children are safe and there can be actions taken to recover them and return them to their homes. And it's just it's just a very a very difficult one for the country again to be dealing with this and not see any sense of our security forces being able to handle the issue.
Thank you, Phoenix. So the final question on this topic is to Ray. Ray, if you were the president of Nigeria, what would your proposed solution to this insecurity crisis be? Because we've, right from 1999 with Obasanjo, Yar'Adua, Jonathan, Buhari, and now Tinubu, we cannot seem to get a grip on the insecurity in the country. So, what would you do, Ray, if you were president?
Okay, thank you so much. My views are well known to people who are very close to me. Fast track the creation of state police. Fast track a law to make citizens be able to own their own guns. I know most people might disagree and say, oh, you can trust people with rifles and guns. But again, it's a democracy. Must allow people have a say on their life. So I believe we should fast track the creation of state police, democratize our security architecture to a point you can even have local government having their own security apparatus. Although if vigilantes already exist, they should be properly trained and regulated. Civil defense should basically be made into local policing. We don't need a national civil defense. It should be attached to the local government chairman of each local government across Nigeria. We don't need a national civil defense domiciled in Abuja. Civil defense should be basically sent and to the local authorities so that we end up not having a national civil defense officer. Every staff of that agency should be sent to the local government across Nigeria's. That's my own view regarding that, because advising people who whose role is they sought the job, they campaign for the job, I expected they'll know better. But for me, this is my own personal opinion.
Just a few quick comments. I mean, while I agree, Ray, on the state police matter, I mean the idea of giving Nigerians guns is not one I'm willing to go as far as, given our large population and of course the that would be a step too far. Anyways, I missed your other question, Michael, on schools being closed down. And for me, I think what I would do is consolidate schools, because it's a major problem when we already have a significant issue of 10 million out of school kids. You don't want to exacerbate that, because we know the very strong correlation with poverty and all those kinds of things. But perhaps what we need to do is to move to bigger schools or have more schools within the same location, so it's easy to secure them. Do you get my point? Instead of having multiple schools scattered everywhere and the security forces are probably not able to reach everybody, find a way to bring, more to the same location and therefore secure them, and make it difficult for anyone to attack. Such schools might be a better way than to totally, make things worse for those children in an area that is already underdeveloped from an education and educational outcomes perspective. Back to you, Michael.
Sorry, Mike, if I could just expand on this before closing this conversation.
Yes, please, Ray.
For many years, right, we always think, like, for example, I am very anti any idea where we infantilize or we think Nigerians can experience what other people experience in the world. Let Nigerians own guns. Let what want to happen, let it happen. We've seen everything in Nigeria. Let people own guns. Let's not protect. Oh, what people are angry over. Let it happen. Let us experience it. Let us bite the bullets and we evolve and we grow. We learn regulation. And the issue about schools being together, no. Schools are built all over the world for people to be able to walk down to school, close it to the people. Apparently, the fact that we have 10 million. Out of ki 10 million kids out of school is the more reason why we need to build schools close to where people live. Like I said, the issue of solving security with kidnapping is it's a very simple approach. Community policing. You don't need the army, the navy, the air force guiding school. You don't need that. You don't need the mobile police. You don't even need the state police. If you have the civil defense, vigilante. Even federal safety officials. That's what you need. And schools will be safe for all to attend. It's not a complex issue. So for us to encourage more people to go to school, for us to make sure the school is safe, we need to focus on local policing. That's what we need to do. And the issue of, I strongly insist and I will support it. As a matter of fact, I've written a personal letter to my representative supporting the ownership of firearm by citizens. That's my own contribution to that conversation. Michael.
Thank you, Ray. Because of time, we need to head to our final topic, which is President Bola Tinubu's visit to Qatar. Phoenix, what was the purpose of this visit and what did it achieve?
Oh my God, I have no let me put it this way. When I first said that he was going to Qatar, I mean the assumption, and of course from what I've read, is it was a trip that was meant to continue his attempts to try to bring investors to Nigeria, and especially with these, the paucity of FX and all of those kinds of things. We're looking for investments into the country. Well, Qatar is a very wealthy nation, and we know that Qataris are looking to extend their influence beyond their borders, and so they're not shy of using their wealth to do that. I mean, this is a country of 3 million people with a $250 billion economy and a $500 billion sovereign wealth fund. They have the money and they're willing to invest it, but they invest it smartly as well. They look for investment opportunities, and they've been keen to expand their influence to Africa. And of course, anybody who typically wants to come to Africa takes Nigeria seriously. So I assume that it was, with all the economic troubles that we have, that our friend, the president, is happy to look east, for, and then we've talked about this before, for capital that may not be as demanding, as capital that you might get from the West. And also, of course, you want to diversify your options. So, it was now a question of let's see what they actually get back. And so when you ask me what did they achieve, I read all their, seven things that they came back with. I didn't see anything that was of any major import. And so for me, it was mainly another photo op. It was, we wait to see whether the Qataris or Qatari businessmen or anyone, sees this or has heard anything that makes them come into the country. They've talked a lot about the reforms that they're doing, but everybody can see that those reforms are not really taking hold because you're not actually carrying through the reforms as you should. So the question becomes if people have heard enough to be convinced to invest. I think the one interesting part of it, and the fact that he felt the need to say so, which also speaks to all of the issues that surrounded his candidacy and all those kind of things, and some of the allegations that happened very early in the in his administration with Beta Edu, with the Interior Minister, with all the people that were that EFCC has alleged in customs. So there's a cloud of corruption hanging around this government. And so he felt it important to announce to these businessmen in Qatar that he personally will see to it that their investments are protected, and if anyone seeks to extort them or to request bribes from them, they should come directly to him. It's a shame, but that's what you get when you have questionable characters through a questionable process in power, and people doubt the sincerity of government, and You have to say things like that to get them to invest. You don't need to convince businessmen to invest. If the conditions are right, if they know that they can get a return on their investment, and if they know that their investments are secure, you don't need to beg anybody to invest. But we're in a position where we won't do the right things, and then we go cap in hand up and down the whole place.
Thank you, Phoenix. Ray, an interesting part of this trip was Bola Tinubu traveling with his two sons, Sheyi and Yinka, two adult sons. Now, this seemed to trigger a lot of debate in the Nigerian political space. A number of people said, well, Obama used to travel with his kids. Tony Blair, no, or maybe Bill Clinton, also traveled with his kid daughter when she was a teenager. And therefore, there is nothing wrong with Bola Tinubu traveling with his two adult sons. Is that your view as well, Ray?
Thank you. The issue of Tinubu's sons is just a distraction to what's important. I'm not saying that issues that deals with expected public behavior and actions or what's expected of a president don't matter, but the issue of this Qatar trip with the issue of his sons is it's immaterial. Nigeria needs $10 billion. Nigeria needs to put people to work. We need to be productive. We need to revive the economy. That was important. I mean, the only question we should be asking is what did we achieve in Qatar? When is the investment coming? That's my view.
Thank you, Ray. Let me bring in Phoenix. Phoenix, do you share Ray's view that the mention of or the talk about Sheyi and Yinka traveling with the president is a mere distraction and all we need is $10 billion? Is that correct, Phoenix?
I don't think it's correct. I don't see. Now, I like the point that you made when you were asking the question. You call them adult sons, and so the comparison that people may make to the Obamas does not hold water. The Obama children were traveling with their parents while they were kids, and there's a difference between, kids and adults who should be far away from government and running their own lives, having their own vocation, whether they be businessmen or they have jobs. I'm sorry, your father becoming president does not make you a part of the entourage of office. And so it's not a distraction for Nigerians to wonder why, again, adults who should be gainfully employed elsewhere separate from government are, seem to have no other vocation and seem to be able to go with their father every time there is an official engagement. What is the basis for that? So it is not a distraction. It is, in fact, an emblem of, the kind of wrong state of this administration. And showing that this administration is not interested in delivering value, but instead interested in entrenching self-interest. That's what it means. Because that seat, those seats that were taken could have been taken by, people who would add value, people who go there to go and enhance Nigeria's standing, people who go there to have proper discussions on the whatever we were trying to extract out of there. What value will those two people be adding to the conversations or to the trip? What were their roles? So it is, I mean, this is not a distraction at all for people to question why, these people were allowed to go on this trip, and it is becoming one too many trips, which the Nigerian taxpayers are paying for, for which they see no value. They hold no position. They have no roles that we are aware of. And so why are they junketing up and down on taxpayers' money?
Ray, did you want to respond?
In as much as like I said, we should not we should at all times hold the tenets, the values, expected behavior, and how decorous public officials should be the president, the senator, governor. But regardless, like I said, the reason why I say it in this situation is this. It's so unfortunate. At the end of the day, if you look at the social commentary, the critics, the opposition, from the day the issue of the sons accompanying their father to Qatar, it immediately took the conversation from the investment to the issue of the son accompanying their father. Why I'm not going to condone anything that is not expected of a president. For me, what's important, what did the trip achieve? We left the meat of the issue aside, dissecting other issues that were not important. I won't lie to you, right? In as much as we must always replicate democracy as it is practiced and how it was defined, Nigeria is a peculiar country, and peculiar in the sense not to allow people behave like uncouth people. But as far as Nigeria is concerned today, what we should be focused on should be development, investments, productivity, security. To me, that was important to me personally as a citizen of Nigeria. Ruben Abati was very angry that day, and Phoenix has his own view, saying that why should add dots? It's immaterial if they are the president's offsprings, they are the president's offspring regardless of age. And if the president so decide that he wants his son, his daughter, his kids, his grandkids to fly with him, he has the prerogative and privilege to so decide. That's my personal opinion view.
Well, it's good that you said that it's your personal opinion, but that is not that is, that doesn't make it fact. The fact is that he does not have the prerogative to spend taxpayers' money how he deems fit.
No,
That is the
I
fact. He
no
does not have the prerogative to
the law
spend
I
Nigeria's
agree with
money
you.
how he likes.
The law allows him to carry, but the way he can pay, like he's done in the US, right? If the kids fly the Air Force One, they send a bill to the president.
Fantastic. So he should also, in transparency, show us that he paid.
Fantastic. That is
I
that.
love that point that you made. If he's paying for his family to travel with him, I'm happy for him to do that. Let him publicize that he paid.
Fantastic. But the conversation, right, did not go into such issues. The
Yeah,
conversation
because there's
has
no
been defined in the
transparency.
media.
Because there's no transparency. If he comes out ahead of time, surely they must expect that taxpayers will challenge something like that. You should preempt that. You should know that nobody will simply keep quiet if they hear that your son is flying up and down with you or on government business. So preempt that by saying that no, my son is coming along on my own dime, and this is the proof that I'm paying for it. But it will be clear, open and shut case. So I agree with you that if those kinds of things are done and and communicated properly, then why should anybody be? Then it becomes a distraction if people are talking about it. It's no longer an issue. But to the extent that it's not done, and so people can assume that it is on taxpayers' money, it is not a distraction. It is a fundamental part of democracy and the rule of law. And running a proper society that people do not, that a president does not assume that he's a king and can do and undo.
The question, therefore, with this viewpoint of yours is that what does the rule book of the Nigerian government, Nigerian constitution, the rule book of the Nigerian president on travel with his children and family says? We know what the US law says, that even if you have guests over, they send you the tab of the bill. But I can, believe me, I can tell you that our law allows people to cook and cook all day and send the bill to the government. So the issue right now on traveling of the president's offsprings, right? Be it adults or young kids, first of all, we need to know what the law says. What does the rule book says about that? What's the government laid down rules of engagement is? When we find that, if we realize it does not exist, then our folks at at the parliament could now maybe write maybe sponsor a bill, then we cannot have that conversation of sending the bill. But right now, no one knows what the rule book says. Michael, do you know?
No, I don't know. I think I don't know what the legal rules say, but if you're following democratic best practices, then a president perhaps should not be traveling with his adult sons at the taxpayer's expense.
I mean, normal probity says that that is, I mean, nobody's going to put it in the rule book that you can carry your family every time you go on a business, on a government trip. I wait to see that rule book that says that he can take his family every time that he travels on a government business.
No,
yeah. What it just doesn't that... it just doesn't sound like anything that any normal person will put inside a rule book. So in the absence of us knowing what the rule book is, normal probity, best practice that we all know tells us that this cannot pass the smell test. So we will act first on what do we normally expect to happen in this kind of scenario. And then if you then show us the rule book, then okay, yes, we agree that Nigeria is actually a crazy country that this kind of things can be allowed.
No, no. Mind you, like you say, that in England, that most of the laws are just common sense, right? In America, it is codified that says that if you invite, as the president of America, pay for your meals. We all know that. What I'm saying is that the president went on a business trip to Qatar. No one is talking about the return on investment on that trip. We allowed the trip of his son to overshadow the important conversation we should have. That is my grounds.
No, but Ray, the point is, if there was something, if there was something that was achieved that was of significance, maybe people would not even talk about it, or maybe it will have died down after they came back from the trip and showed that yes, you know, this is what we delivered. But you go off on these trips and you come back, and there's really nothing of substance that you can point to that you achieved. Did you see anything of substance that came out, or any agreement that they brought out and said that they had achieved? I mean, I read all their 7 points saying that everything was just blah, 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 blah. We signed these agreements. What agreement did you, what major agreement did you sign? How much has been committed that will be invested in Nigeria? Because we know other countries where Qatar is putting money and they can tell you the billions of dollars. We, when the people on the Middle East, when they want to truly, truly invest, Egypt, they just invested, they are doing a deal to buy a holiday resort type area for $24 billion. That's investment. You can call, you can see what project it is. You can say how much money it is. What did they bring back from Qatar? So in the absence of anything that is substantial, of course, people will bring back their grouse. Because you don't bring anything substantial, and you're spending our little money that we don't have to gallivant up and down with your children. But if you bring something of substance, maybe people will now be like, ah, but they delivered this, so okay, let's turn a blind eye to what you've done. You can't have it both ways.
Well, no, thank you. I must step in at this point because it's clear that we don't necessarily agree on the issues. But on the final question before we conclude is, I think we've already touched on this point, but Phoenix, why Qatar? When you're looking for investment in your economy, foreign exchange, you want to do a lot of exporting, you want to attract imports, would Qatar be the sort of country you'd be wanting to engage in a strategic partnership, Phoenix? And if not, why do they invest so much political capital and media coverage on this trip?
I mean, Michael, where we are today, every country except for maybe the likes of North Korea, Russia, and those kinds of countries will not be on the table, right? Because, I mean, we do need investment. We do need, you know, to have our economy, you know, rescued. And so anywhere we can get, you know, good investment is good. And like I said earlier, Qatar have, they have loads of money. So, I mean, it's not like you're going to talk to some poor country. You're going to talk to a country that can actually make a significant investment. If Qatar decides tomorrow to invest $20 billion in Nigeria, they won't feel it. But Nigeria will know that, yes, we received an investment. So, yes, it's Qatar is a good example of some of a country you should be talking to. The question then becomes, what are you talking to them about? What are you offering? And are they interested? You know, because before you do those kinds of trips, right, you need to first of all understand Qatar's investment philosophy. What are the kinds of things that they're looking to invest in? What are the kinds of areas that they're interested in? What are the kinds of things that you see have create common ground? We know that Qatar is perhaps the world's, you know, most prominent natural gas, you know, exporter, you know. And Nigeria has significant natural gas deposits. Could that be an area of collaboration? You know, Nigeria has, Qatar is in the Middle East, you know, predominantly a desert. So we know that growing food, those kinds of things are concerns. They import food a lot. Can we be, you know, supportive in that area and create collaboration? So you need to first of all understand what are the things that are important to the Qataris that they're looking to use their money to invest in, and then see whether you are in that position or you can put yourself in that position before you go off and have those conversations. So I'm hoping that they did that. I'm hoping that they had those kinds of conversations. But to your question, yes, Qatar is a viable, you know, candidate for you to go and seek investment from, but you need to have something that you can offer and put on the table, and you need to make sure that, you know, you get something substantial and have proper conversation. So, you know, I wait to see concrete and substantial outcomes from the discussions and not another jaw-jaw that was just a photo op to show that, you know, you're going up and down the world and we don't see anything coming out of it.
Well, thank you, Phoenix. But our time is up. So, first of all, I must thank our guest, Ray, for participating in a very interesting, lively debate. Thank you, Phoenix, for co-hosting. And last but not least, I say thank you to our listeners for always being supportive and giving us helpful feedback. But until same time next week, I say have a fantastic 7 days to everyone.
You too. Bye.
Thanks, Michael, and thanks, Ray, for joining us. Thanks,
Thanks,
listeners.
Phoenix.
Have a great week.
Cheers. Have a great week.